How do we set up a budget?
There is such a joy that can come when we have a healthy relationship with that.
How do you project your tithing and your growth?
The question is, where does the money come from?
Now you need to have a clear mechanism for how people give.
Where money is going should directly align with the beliefs and the values of the church.
Let them serve the Lord with their gifts. Welcome to the Lutheran Church Planter, a podcast exploring the theology, philosophy, and practice of planting new Lutheran congregations. I'm your host, Danny Coyle, church planter and director of home missions for the Association of Free Lutheran Congregations, joined by my co-host and fellow church planter, Matthew Baumann. And today we are going to talk about a super fun topic, and that is money. All part of this process of planning, right? As we're thinking through of what needs to be done to get a church off the ground, right? We've talked about values, and we've talked about even setting out our communications, our branding, all that kind of stuff. Well, money is a big part of this. This is just the reality of our world. We have that in our own lives. We have to deal with money with our mortgage or a car or school or food, just everything. Money is just a part of our lives. It's part of the church too. And there's a certain spirituality of money. There's, you know, sometimes we're afraid to talk about it. And in the church and just in our own lives, we want to be super private about it. And sometimes that's necessary, but I think the church errs more times in not talking about it than talking about it. And we've seen the abuse of it, whether that's the prosperity preachers. But, you know, I know I've done this as a pastor. I have apologized for talking about it, and that's not good either. Missed the whole beauty of giving. So maybe, Matt, I'll bring in here, as we think about stewardship, as it relates to, you know, raising money for a church, but maybe just even bigger, like why is this a good thing? Why should we celebrate the theology of money?
Yeah, this is a whole podcast we could talk about, the theology of money. Yeah, and it's a couple things. One, you know, Luther famously said, you know, the last thing that we give to God is our pocketbook. What's the point? Because money has such a hold on us. Mm-hmm. It has, and every culture you go to, it has a hold because it promises what? It can become a god so easily because it promises safety. Happiness, right? Comfort for tomorrow. So we hold it very closely. We cling to it very. So on one hand, I think the first step is like talking about money actually allows us to really get at that deep heart issue of are we fearing, loving, and trusting God above all things, above our money. So that's like the maybe kind of negative side. The positive side, though, it allows us to step out in faith. And as we are generous and as we grow in generosity, as believers of Jesus, we receive blessings. Spiritual blessings of joy and freedom and peace from trusting God and not clinging to that. It's like a Sabbath practice, right? God said, hey, Israel, you know, rest in me one day a week in order that you would grow in peace and joy. So it is when we treat our money like that, we can trust God with it, right? So there is something that it helps expose in our hearts, but it also turns us towards Jesus. And there is such a joy that can come when we have a healthy relationship with that. So as pastors, is there any other topic that we say we're not going to talk? Like, we're not going to talk about lying because that could offend people. We're not going to talk about unforgiveness because we're not going to talk about adultery. No, we're going to talk about it because it's part of God's word. And so it is also with this topic of stewardship. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I raise my hand and say, yeah, I've been one of those that this is hard sometimes to talk about. It has been. And I go through seasons of work. Sometimes I'm joyful to talk about, and other seasons I feel hesitant. And that's a lack of maybe obedience and faith on my part. So really important topic for sure.
Yeah. Hopefully this episode will be very practical of just thinking through how do we set up a budget to plan for planting a church, right? And so there's a lot of good, helpful things out there. If you just Google this, you're going to find a ton of stuff. So a lot of this stuff is just we've just compiled or we've done it ourselves or different things. But, you know, getting to the question of like, how much money are we going to actually need to raise? You know, if we have like a timeline of, let's say, 5 years, for example, you know, what are the necessary resources we're going to need to help us get to that 5-year point and ideally be self-sustainable, right? And that's startup funds and all these other things. We'll get to that. A lot of that's going to depend on what model you are deploying, right? And by that, you know, we had an episode last year about congregational models, parachute models, things like that. And this way, it's maybe a little different. We're talking about like budget models. So, you know, there's a rise in bivocational and co-vocational kind of planting models. And those are really interesting. And I think those are going to continue to rise and something that we really need to take seriously. bivocational model is, for example, a pastor has a part-time job on the side that they use to supplement their income because maybe the church can't support them or, and ideally someday down the road, the church will grow enough that could support a pastor. Co-vocational, it's kind of becoming more of a trendy term too, is that this is the initial strategy of a person choosing to serve in a vocation while they're being a pastor. And despite the growth of the church, they're going to use this as a launching point for outreach. Obviously, in both those models, you're going to need less money just because you're not full-time. And that's the other thing to consider. If you are going to be a full-time church planter, then you're going to need more money. And so, you know, as you set your budget, it's really going to be dependent upon just your income revenue as a pastor and what kind of model you're going to be looking at. So one of the questions that comes up here is, man, it just seems like it's always part of this conversation is, man, it's so expensive. Church planting is so expensive and maybe we got to figure something out because we don't want to spend that much money. And I just find that an interesting question because I don't feel like we ask that question in a lot of other areas. You know, we don't ask that question when we're sending missionaries, when missionaries are going and raising, you know, $100,000, if not more every year to go in a foreign field to help start churches, for example, or other things. We don't think about that in other aspects of our life, but for some reason, this has become kind of a taboo thing to talk about. Oh, we don't want to raise that much money to plant a church as if that's a bad thing. And just remember our goal here in planting churches is that we aren't wanting to plant something that just kind of blows up in a year or two and then just peters out. We want to plan a long-lasting, mature, generational church. I recorded a video, you know, a couple weeks ago about the 150-year anniversary at the church I had served at right out of seminary. And what an amazing, you know, testimony of generational impact, 150 years. That's what we want, right? And so, you know, you think of other things in our lives as that require money, our kids, you know, we don't ask that question when we have babies, right? Young families, we want kids. Babies are terribly expensive. Life is very expensive. They consume time and energy and they're throughout their lives, right? Well, that's a good thing because children change the future. They set the generational direction of our society. So it's worth it. Starting new churches costs money. It's just the way it is. You know what? But maintaining existing churches also costs a lot of money too. And it's just everything costs money. And so it goes back to like, what are we trying to do? And what is necessary in our current culture to establish a healthy, mature, fully functioning congregation that's going to last and be an incredible outpost for the gospel for years to come. And that is going to cost money. That's just the way it is. And so we're going to start maybe giving some ideas on how to set that budget. So Matt, I'm going to kind of let you run with this too for a little while. Of as if you're like a launch team or a pastor, a plant pastor, you get a piece of paper out and you start thinking of all the different categories. So what do you need to think about when you start setting your budget?
Yeah, there are, you know, some big categories. I'd say three maybe big categories. You can break your budget down into things that are just you have to spend money on this and things that are flexible. Okay, so think about that. So things that are operating expenses will include things like the pastor's salary. Like that's going to be a really big thing. And again, you can look at part-time, full-time, you know, talk all about that. But that once that is going to be a set cost. You know, from month to month, you can't be like, well, hey, this month we're only going to pay the pastor, you know, half a salary because we didn't get enough tithe. It is a set cost. Whereas something else, like say we're going to do an outreach program. We're going to have, you know, give away free hot dogs and hamburgers at the 4th of July parade. Well, that's something you can or can't do, right? It's a flexible category for you. So a church budget is always going to have, and every church has that. You have your flexible and then your operating expenses that are just set in stone. So putting your budget together, that is, you want to start with that really hard bottom line. What are the things we absolutely have to have? And the pastor's salary is your number one asset. Okay. So again, I think sometimes as churches, we don't place the right value on that, but you want to make sure that you're taking care of the pastor and his family, that they're not suffering in a really profound way in that. You know, you want him to be able to enter into that ministry in a joyful way. So kind of two big categories when you think about the budget that you're putting together. you know, within like the operating expense, you got to think about things like your rental cost, insurance, sound equipment, possibly chairs, you know, worship, anything you're going to need for worship, folding chairs, maybe a trailer. Those are all things that you're going to have probably a higher, you're going to have a higher set a cost when you first start church planning, you know, and that's going to go into your first year budget of, well, we got to buy a trailer. We got to buy chairs. We got to buy a sound system. But once you get that, now you have that, you know, maybe for the next 5-7 years until they get worn out. So there is going to be an initial kind of higher cost that you are going to be doing actually, you know, raising expenses for that. And then once you get into the planting, you're not going to have those same costs anymore. So that's for me really, really high level. I could get super detailed, but what would you add to
that?
Yeah,
I think, you know, I think when I raised money to be a missionary in Ukraine, you know, you always have like startup costs, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's the same idea you're getting at, is there are some things that, you know, people are going to want to give to specific things, a trailer, sound system, website. We talked about that last episode, or all these other things that can kind of carry on right off the bat. It's when you got it, it's done. And then there's the ongoing operating expenses. And so I think there's a lot of categories. Again, there's a ton of stuff online that kind of gives you a framework for this. You mentioned that budgeting for missions and education and all those types of things. But you list all those categories and you learn from others. Maybe your parent church. Maybe you can even take some of the budgeting from them or learn from others. Don't just pull numbers out of thin air on this. Is that you can do the research and figure it out. They'll give you the best idea because you want to be accurate. You don't want to just be idealistic in this. It too much is probably not going to help. Too little obviously is going to stretch you. So do the research, talk to people, crowdsource, and that'll give you a better idea how to set this. Obviously, it's going to be highly contextual. All of our budgets are, you know, but this is just going to be helpful for you to have a target amount that you are shooting for.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hard to, you get dangerous when you throw out numbers, but one of the big numbers in church planning over the last, you know, decade, you know, not taking inflation into account, again, context and all that, but it is roughly, you need to look at probably having about a $500,000 that you're going to invest in a church plant over a 4 to 5 year period. Okay. And that in some settings, that might be super, super low. And you really need to be looking at $700,000 or $800,000. Other settings, that maybe that's at the high end, right? In a rural setting. So it does depend upon where you're planting. Usually in a city, an urban, suburban, it's gonna be much more costly because the cost of living is gonna be higher in that setting. So you just gotta know that. But here's the interesting thing. It's more costly, but also the members that you eventually will get are probably being paid more and their tithing is gonna reflect that as well. So there's kind of a little bit of a give and take on that. But that number, I think 500,000 is kind of a good ballpark just to be kind of thinking about, okay, that's probably what we need to be shooting for, something in that range. I will say, and we'll say this at the end too, but Andy, you don't have to come up with this online, Google it, but Home Missions, we want to help you with this. We have samples. We will sit down with you, talk through, you know, what is your model? What is the location? What is the cost of living? Help you put together, here are some of the things you need to be thinking about. So it's not going to have to be all on you in putting this together.
Yeah, most likely there's people around you that are good at this. Just like we talked about, you know, with branding and with the creative arts, that kind of stuff, finding people that are good at this. You're probably going to have someone that's gifted in finance that can help you along the way. I certainly did. And I'm so thankful that when in our core team, we had a retired banker. You know, that was such a helpful thing. And so find those guys and just start putting stuff on paper. Another question that comes up often, rightly so, is then, well, who holds the money? And if you're in a parent church situation, or if you have some kind of a congregation that's going to oversee you, it's just very natural that they do. It's just that just is a huge blessing for you as a brand new church that you don't have to worry about rushing all these systems to get in place. You can just encourage people to send money to the parent church. And then they just then can allocate that money. And it's just good for ease. It's good for accountability and for you, but also for the givers as well. And so that's the best thing for at least a couple of years, allowing that parent church to hold the money, just to be a huge asset and a blessing for you. So you don't have to think about it, basically. So as we project our needs, you know, we talked about setting the budget. We talked about the different categories. One of the things that talks about that, I mean, that is a big part of this conversation too, is how do you project your tithing? You know, what you're starting with, and as you are projecting people coming into your group, how is this helpful, and how do you do it? And so Matt, maybe run with that a little bit. Like, how do you project your tithing and your growth? Because that's going to be factored into setting the budget as well.
Yeah. So the question is, where does the money come from? Again, this is God's resources. God is going to designate that to expand his kingdom. Where does it come from? Really kind of, I would say, three maybe big categories. You're going to have maybe congregations, a mother church, other congregations that want to designate, you know, a gift every month, every year towards a plant. Could be individuals, you know, within the AFLC that say, hey, we want to support this plant. It could be home mission grants, right, that they want to, we're going to designate money to a plant. But then you're also going to have your internal giving. So internal, external is often how church plants look at it, is like internal, external, right? So that external is mother church, other individuals, not a part of our plant, but want to support it, a home mission grant. That's an external support. And then internal is going to be that internal tithing, okay? So both these are going to have to go together. The goal is for this every church plant to be financially self-sufficient within, ideally, a four to five, 6 year kind of time frame. Okay. If a church is not self-sufficient, a lot of studies have shown by that kind of 5 to 6 year mark, their chance of ever becoming actually financially sufficient is dramatically drops. So there is this really hard push to say, like, we want to get there. And it's not because that's like a magic thing, but more the finances is always a reflection of the health of a church. So it, you know, it's more of a correlation factor than a causation factor. But when you're looking at that external and internal, you know, okay, say we set a budget, $500,000 for just, we're working with this, $500,000 for 5 years, okay? What you're going to do is say, okay, based on our starting tithing units, okay? And usually how this works in a church is we refer to it as giving units, the number of giving units. Because what a giving unit is usually a household. So you might have five people in one household, one person in another household, that's two different giving units. It's less helpful to say by the number of people. Just because you could have children, you could have, you know, retired people on a very fixed income, like there's all factors in there. So better to say, let's look at giving units. What are the number of giving units? And again, depending upon how your church is starting, if you're starting with, you know, your mother church is giving you 30 people, or they're giving you, you know, 10 giving units or five giving units, that's very different than when you start with a parachute church plant and you're moving into a city, you don't know anybody. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take you a year and a half to get 10 giving units. So right off the bat, you can see how that can impact you, how much money you're going to need to raise from external sources based on that internal giving unit tithing factor.
Yeah, I think that's really an important clarification. You know, if you have this big number and, you know, okay, $500,000 in 5 years, $120,000 a year. And if I can, with our tithing, come up with 30,000 of that 120, you know, just it's really helpful as we think of our projections and our budgeting to know what we're going to need in communicating with our people, but also as we, well, it helps us work harder in fundraising too. And so what a blessing it is for churches that do start with maybe a larger core that are committed, because usually those that are committed are going to give more too. And so I think the amount of giving units is really, really key. I think it's really encouraging. It's really important to encourage our people initially and throughout, obviously, but to recognize, like, hey, if you're going to buy into this, we really need you to give to it. And the national average for tithing is 2.5%. It's pretty pathetic within evangelical Christians. We talk about that all the time. Certainly, we would want more than that. We need more than that. That's a stewardship issue. And I think it's important within church planting to really encourage our people to buy in. And that is a definite reflection within our pocketbook and to be a part of this. And so as you set your budget, this is a great opportunity as a leader, as a launch team, to really encourage your people to think stewardship, to recognize, like, hey, this is going to go. We all really have to sacrifice. and see what God does here. And so you kind of have to plan that average tithe with reality, but then encourage your people to give more for sure. Anything else you want to add with that?
Yeah, no. So with a budget, that internal external giving is what we tend to do is we build the budget based on a decreasing, we would say, subsidy or decreasing support, so that you're recognizing your first year possibly is you're getting zero internal support or very little. So your first year of a church plant, your budget is primarily 100% external giving. And then maybe year two, you're going to say, okay, year two is it's 80% external giving, 20% internal giving. And then you keep going on where eventually you're going to skew where you're like, we're at, you know, 10% external support and 90% internal. Right. That is it. So we sometimes refer to it as a runway. Think about an airplane, you know, it needs a runway to get off the ground. It's got to pick up speed, pick up momentum to get up off the ground. So external fundraising helps give you a runway. It buys you time so that you can actually, you know, be reaching people and gathering people and building even a giving culture, right? A theology of giving with internally. Also, you know, a dynamic here is that I read a guy last month, I was talking to a church planter here in town, non-denominational church, and they're maybe 10, 12 years old, and they've grown a lot in just the last year. And he was saying, yeah, one of the things though is like our giving is not keeping up. And he was saying he had been doing a lot of research on it, and apparently the average is it takes about a year for a new attendee to begin tithing to their church. Mm. So you could have a lot of growth in 1 year, but those people are not going to begin giving until they're really bought in. Mm-hmm. So that's another kind of like interesting kind of factor to lay over it. Another one is if you're reaching people who are maybe not mature in their faith, you know, which hopefully that's what we're doing, then you're also, they're not going to have any type of like tithing theology or a maturity of tithing to actually build that into their personal budget. So that's also going to take time. That's not a year. That's not 2. That might be 3, 4, 5, 6 years before you're really building them up to that point. So that is another factor as well, of if you're wanting to reach those folks, which we all do, you have to have enough money to actually support you to give you that runway to get off the ground.
Yeah, that's a really important point you just made. And I saw that play out at our congregation too, where there's just a lag in the giving. And that's because with new people, and that's something to celebrate. And I remember having many conversations with some of the older, more mature believers that maybe were frustrated about that. It's like, hey guys, this is entirely normal. You know, we are a new church. These are new believers or, you know, coming back, and this is not a part of their lives. And so there's going to be a lag here, and just, you see a slow increase. And that's really then the work of the Spirit of God in their lives to help them grow in the Lord and grow in their understanding of stewardship. So this is something to communicate and actually speak to, that this is going to happen. We shouldn't be surprised by this, but to celebrate that this is the evidence of God actually bringing new people into our church. Really, really good observation there.
Yeah. Another, I would say, factor on that is the age demographic of people you're reaching. Mm-hmm. Now, ideally, I think every healthy church is reflecting all ages, but we don't all have control over that, right? It's like for us, we're a very young church. We are praying for more gray heads. Like we would love to have more of that. Just not, you know, who we have been reaching. If you're reaching really young people, like college age students, they have no money. They're broke as broke, right? So they got nothing to tithe, very little, you know, versus young professionals or midlife or retired folks, right? Or retired folks could be just because they've worked their whole life doesn't mean they have money. Now they're on Social Security. Maybe they can't tithe a lot. Mm-hmm. So it is an interesting kind of just like the demographic that you're ministering to if you're really urban inner city. Also, you know, in the planting world, it's well known you're probably never going to be financially stable if you're inner city, because those folks just can't support that. It's going to be a mission outpost. Mm-hmm. So there are all these kind of dynamics that play into, and some of these are outliers, maybe in an AFLC context, but those are factors that play into putting your budget together. Okay, so we've talked maybe a little bit about here, you know, high level budget. You know, money's important. You got to talk about it. Some of the, you know, where's money coming from? Tell me a little bit more about, and I know we want to do a whole episode, but could you just real quickly give me where the whole idea of fundraising? That's a very big topic. Give me short couple minute overview on that, and we'll jump deeper into that in a later episode. But what is the most important thing we need to know about fundraising now?
have fun with it. And, you know, we can get specifics later, but I think fundraising is really fun because you're really raising people's eyes to the vision of church planting, of missions. And so, I think sometimes people can see it as such a burden. Oh, do we really have to go around and, you know, send letters or go to congregations and speak and just constantly talk to people? I think that needs to be flipped. Instead of fundraising, mm-hmm. you're really people raising, you're partner raising. You're raising people that are going to care about you and care about the work. You're raising people that are going to pray for you and pray for the work. You referenced, I think, last episode of just a weekly email to your supporters. I remember doing that all the time as well. And it's like, give people something to pray about and celebrate with you as you are chronicling the work of the Spirit in the congregation. And yeah, the money's a part of it, but money always follows vision, right? And so I think seeing fundraising as an opportunity to help people understand the mission of God in the community and how they can be a part of it simply through praying and giving. And so it's so much bigger than just raising money. You're really raising partners. And that's then really fun. And there's different levels of that. Like you mentioned before of, you know, your parent church, and they might have funding for to handle it. They might not. Partnering churches in your district, whatever local ones they're at. Home missions, we have a whole kind of a grant that is set up to just diminish over 5 years to help get you off the ground. And then just individuals, man, we all have networks of people that probably care about what we're trying to do. And so to help through all those different levels, get people excited about mission. And when they're excited about, hey, God is doing something awesome through churches, and here's another new mission outpost that we can really grow the gospel in people's lives, they're going to get behind that. And so fundraising is super fun. It's not a burden. It's not something to be stressed out about. There are steps to do, and I think we're going to have an episode just on steps for fundraising, but I just encourage you to see this as an opportunity instead of something negative.
That's really good. Absolutely. Yeah. There is a lot of, I think when I talk to church planters, this is one of the things. They're passionate about sharing the good news of Jesus with people, but they often are very afraid mm-hmm. and hesitant to do the fundraising part. Mm-hmm. But when we connect, you know, this like sharing the gospel with people and fundraising, these are intricately connected together, right? It does bring a different level of confidence and joy in inviting people to partner with us in this kingdom work. And we don't have to be bashful about it because it's like telling someone about the most important, like, I don't know, toy that you recently bought, right? Oh man, I bought this new tool and it's the most amazing tool ever. You know, you should get one too, you know? How much more significant when it comes to sharing the good news of Jesus with people who are lost, right? And separated from Jesus. Like how we should have zero sense of guilt or shame about inviting people to partner mm-hmm. to have that good news get out. Yeah. Truly, truly, right? It'd be like this. It'd be like, you know, oh, hey, we need to, you know, we got ships over here that are crashing on these rocks, right? We need to build a lighthouse. We want everyone we know to help us build a lighthouse so that every storm season yeah. we don't have 5 ships get, you know, wrecked here. Like none of us would feel bad about trying to raise mm-hmm. money for that, right? Mm-hmm. And again, how much more true is it yeah. for seeing churches established? So yeah, parent church, partner churches. This is what I love about the AFLC. You know, mm-hmm. our size, yep. one of the things that's so beautiful about it is that we are a church and, you know, or a family. And I saw mm-hmm. this, you know, when we planted, just seeing congregations come around us and praying for us. And I love getting the emails of, hey, we're praying for you mm-hmm. in this area. You know, here's a $25 check. You know, here's a $250 Lenten tithe we're going to give to you, or here's a commitment mm-hmm. In that. So we'll dive deeper into that fundraising yeah. thing. What about this? Okay, so we've created a budget. You know, been working with home missions. We got some rough numbers of what we think we need for about 5 years, where we've kind of laid out what we think we're going to need to raise externally based on our growth and our internal giving. We have a couple partners outlined. So very practically then, like what is the next step? So we got a plan. Now what?
Yeah, now you need to have a clear mechanism for how people give. And so, you know, we talked last episode about a website. And one of the values of having a website is online giving, right? And so there needs to be a very clear funnel for people to know what to do and how to give. And then you need to communicate that with them. And so make it very easy for people to give. Don't complicate this. And then, yeah, communicate with them big time on how to do that. Last week we talked about, you know, newsletters and other types of aspects of communication, but constantly use those platforms to communicate your needs, what's going on, where you're at in fundraising, and place it before people. Because if people don't know anything, they're probably not going to give, or they don't know what to give or how to give. And so just make things easy for people. Communicate, over-communicate, and you'll see the Lord will just bless that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So communicate your needs. I'll just kind of reiterate that. You got to communicate your needs. What is your overall amount you're trying to raise? Don't be bashful mm-hmm. about communicating that. Mm-hmm. And two, give updates on how much you mm-hmm. have raised. Like that's a really key thing. People want to know. The Pillmans have done a good job with this, I think, in you know, their website and, you know, over the last 2 years, updating like, hey, here's what we need. Here's how much we've raised, so that people know what that ongoing need mm-hmm. is. And then, yeah, make it super easy where they can click on a button. And ideally, and we'll talk more about this next on fundraising, but ideally it's something you can get people to give reoccurringly.
Yeah.
One-time gifts are great and a huge blessing, but it's even better if you can, in projecting and planning your budget, when you can see commitments of like, hey, we're going to give $25 a month for the next 2 years. So that's one of the things we did in fundraising was like getting commitments and getting people yep. to actually say, like, how much are you, how long are you going to commit for?
Mm-hmm.
Then we could plan how much we actually needed based on that. So that was really, so you know, communication, make it easy. Super, super helpful. What else?
Yeah. And again, rely on people around you to do this work. So if I'm a pastor, I don't want to touch the money. Obviously that's bad. Pastors should not be handling money, but you're going to find people around you in your circle, especially if you're a parent church. Let them do this. Let them help you. Let them serve the Lord with their gifts through this way. And so make sure you set up all your systems so that you are not being a part of this. Yeah, you might be the mouthpiece to sell vision and to get people excited about giving to the Lord, but make sure your systems are in place so that it's clear, it's easy, and that it doesn't have to go through you. That's kind of just basic wisdom there and how you set things up. So any final
yeah,
words?
Well, and when you say, you know, that you're as a pastor, not a part of it, what you mean there is that you're not handling the money. You're not the one,
right.
You know, making the deposits. And as a pastor, and I think this is something, again, as a church, maybe we can grow in is recognizing, again, there's a direct link to our theology and how we handle money. And the pastor should be shepherding his flock, right? And leading. And I would say, I mean, I've talked to some pastors and like, I don't know our church budget at all. I let the finance people. And I think there's a disconnect when that's the attitude that a pastor has mm-hmm. with the mm-hmm. finances of the church. I think mm-hmm. there's a direct disconnect with shepherding the people when it comes to that. But yeah, so the theology and the vision, connecting it to that budget, where money is going should directly align with the beliefs and the values of the church. But then practically, yeah, you're not the finance guy. Like you have right. people, you have, you know, deacons or trustees or whoever handles your money. They're the ones who handle the money. You're not the one handling the money. Mm-hmm. And it does get a little, it can be a little hard when you're very first getting a church right. started, but that's the beauty of having a mother church.
Yeah.
Don't go start a bank account right off the bat. Everyone wants to do that. Don't do that. You're going to create a mess with taxes. You're not nonprofit yet. Let your mother church create a designated fund. All the money funnels through them. They have a experienced finance person handling it. All the tax, you know, stuff is going through them. Wait to start anything. Don't go open up some bank right off the bat. I think that's just a very easy first mistake to make.
Yeah.
So let someone else handle that off the bat.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot more we could talk about here. Obviously, we're going to talk about another one on fundraising. If you have questions about budgeting, talk to us at Home Missions. We would love to be able to support you in this because it is this is a foundational. This can be a make it or break it for churches. One of the number one things that leads to a church not getting off the ground is a run out of money. And then all of a sudden they start getting desperate and they start having to shift things around. And that's just really sad when you see that happen. So it's really unnecessary. If you have put a good budget together, you have, you know, just use some common sense and wisdom that you would use on your personal finances with it. it's there's really no reason that a church plant should have to run out of money if they are seeking to kind of put all their ducks in a row here. So that's my final word.
Yeah, really good, really good. Well, thanks for joining us today. I'd love to, again, have your help with these episodes. Share them with your friends. This is an episode that'd be good even just for a regular church, right? About money and thinking through things. Share it with people. But if you're interested in learning more about planting within our Free Lutheran Church, love to visit with you. Contact us at aflchomemissions.org. See you next time.